Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set again, as usual, for our Sunday morning show. And remember, it's a busy, busy day in the world of sport, especially football. The Bears are home at Soldier Field against Seattle. They have one of the great young quarterbacks in pro football in Zorn, and he's worth the price of admission to see, and whether the Bears can contain him, we'll know more about that along about 5 o'clock. There's an outstanding game later in the day. That'll be on the tube, and that's Miami against Dallas. And it involves two of the best coaches in the country, one that players tell me is the best, and that's Don Shula, Miami. So it'll be interesting to see whether they can curtail that Dallas attack with Staubach and those great runners they have. Anyway, it's a great day for football viewing, but if you can, get out to Soldier Field and see the Bears. Speaking of football, our guest today is one of the best friends I've ever had in sports, and he was the greatest quarterback the Bears have ever had, and I'm referring to Sid Luckman. We have many, many things to talk about with Sid, and he'll be our guest, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. We're delighted in the height of the football season to have Sid Luckman as our guest, one of the great quarterbacks of all time. And he was a quarterback in perhaps the most memorable football game ever played, a championship game that the Bears won by a score of 73-0, an absolutely unbelievable score against a very good team. Sid, what sort of psychology did the old man George Halas use on you fellas that day?
Bob, that's a very, very interesting experience, and one, of course, was the most thrilling experience I've ever had on a football field. We had played the Washington Redskins about 3 or 4 weeks prior to the championship game, and they beat us 7-3. It was a very unusual game in that we were marching up and down the field, but whenever we came near the goal line, it seemed we just couldn't get over that last stripe, and that's what the ball game is all about, to get over the last stripe. Marching 90 or 99 yards, but not getting over the last single white line is just a complete waste of time. Well, on the last play of the game, when the score was 7-3, favor the Redskins, I threw a pass to a man named Osmanski, who was waiting in the end zone, and it was only an 8 or 9 yard pass, and the pass was we call a hook pass. He hooked over the goal line, and I sort of hit him right in the stomach. It was one of those plays that should have been a touchdown or a completed pass. One of the Redskin men came by and knocked his hands down. We thought the official was watching that particular play, but he seemed to just ignore the fact that we had an interference penalty, which, of course, would have put the game up, which given the Bears a chance to proceed and go ahead and win the game. Well, Halas came running onto the field, and, of course, he was extremely upset, and so was the rest of the team, because we did want to win. And that was always our determination, and we were predetermined, and everything we tried to do was always the ultimate goal was victory and success. Well, we vowed after that game that we were going to come back there, and if we played them in the World Championship Super Bowl, we were going to try to really show them we were a better football team. Well, for 3 or 4 weeks after that, we were fortunate enough to continue to win every game for the remainder of the season, and we went down to Washington to play the World Championship against the Washington Redskins. It was a very unusual thing, that because we usually used to play cards and have fun, but in this particular trip, there wasn't one person who didn't have his playbook out. There wasn't one man that was really, you could just feel the highly emotional reaction of realizing that we were going back there to play the team that had beaten us in the previous couple of weeks. Well, we got down to Washington. We practiced in the stadium in Washington. And Sunday, we had our pregame breakfast with the rest of the team. And, of course, Halas always had a little quarterback meeting and talked to us about hoping they use the same defense so we would know how to attack the defense. But the greatest psychological impact that I think any man has ever done in the history of football is he had pasted around the dressing room statements made by the Washington Redskins after they had beaten us. And some of them, particularly the owner of the team, said the Bears were front runners, the Bears were first half crybabies. And all these things were very, very derogatory remarks about a team that Halas thought was a great football team. Well, in pasting these things around the dressing room, he made one of the classical remarks that I've ever heard in my life. He turned to the team and said, "Gentlemen," and these words, Bob, I will never forget. He said, "I believe in my heart that this is as great a football team as has ever walked on the football field. I know that you're going to go out there and show the American public that all the things I think about you are things that I'm sure that you're going to really realize today." And he said, "Let me show you what your opponents think of you." And they're pacing on the the dressing room wall, or the remarks of these boys. It was the most inspiration. It was the way he said it. It was the way it was done. It was the most beautiful psychological, as I stated before, impact that I have ever undertaken. And I've been through many football games in my life. But I will say this. We went out on that field. We couldn't, the surge of all of us running to that, get onto that field was almost unheralded than anything I've ever seen. We just couldn't get out to that door fast enough. It was just awful, Bob. Well, to make a long story short, we got on the field, and when Hallis said to me, now, look, Sid, he said, you watch their defense. If they're using the same defense, and we had studied and studied and studied how to attack this defense, and, Bob, we really attacked them, and, of course, we went on to win 73-0. And the last touchdown, which is the most unusual thing that's ever happened, we didn't have any more balls left. That was the last ball because we'd scored so many touchdowns and kicked them out of the stadium that we had to throw a pass for a touchdown, and that was the end of the game. But, Bob, let me just say one other thing. I've said this many times.
Great story.
Well, thank you, Bob. The greatest thing I can say, and I know we've got limited time, is that that was the greatest thrill that I have, that a man could ever have as a coach. But I just want to leave you with one thought. And to the people of Chicago, the greatest single thrill I've ever had in my life was being a member of the Chicago Bears. To be able to play with the kind of boys that I played with or the kind of men I played with. To have a coach as sensational as and as great as George Hallis. And to be able to wear a Bear uniform and the dignity and in the respect and in the greatness that George Hallis had left upon us is something that was the biggest single thrill I've ever had in my life in football.
Well, that's wonderful, and I feel the same way about George Hallis as you do. It has to lead to the present-day Bears, who have everything written about them and everything said about them on radio and television. Everybody's saying, what's wrong with the Bears? Why have the Bears lost? I hear Finks on Monday night on his Brad Palmer show, and he doesn't sound at all concerned. Listening to him, you'd think the Bears had won six straight. They've lost six straight. It has to be a disappointing season for the old man. As I know, Hallis can't sit out there and see these mistakes Sunday after Sunday. How do you view it?
Bob, the first thing I want to say to you is I do talk to Coach Hallis a minimum of three, four times a week. And I know he's very, very not upset, but he's really disappointed because you have to realize he's so anxious to someday bring back the respectability of the Chicago Bear football team, and we haven't won the championship now in many, many years. But I think the way you really look at the thing is the Bears have a fine football team. They do have some outstanding material. Jim Finks has done a terrific job in bringing the right kind of credibility as far as the players are concerned, but they've had always seems at the most crucial time of the game something seems to happen, either a penalty, an interception, a fumble, or whatever it may be, but fundamentally and basically they are a sound football team, and when you get down to the realization of what it should be like, the Bears today should have only lost one game. They've been outplayed in one game, and that game was a Minnesota game. In every other game, the Bears should have been in there, they should have been winning actually, and their record should be only one defeat rather than the number of defeats they've had in this season. It's really been a very disheartening, disappointing season. The coach, to the fans of Chicago who are so loyal and who love the Bears with all their love that the fans can have for a team. But as far as Finks is concerned and as far as the Bear organization, they do know that you're only as good as the foundation you build in life. If you build a building and the foundation is not solid, that building is going to topple, whether it be anything in life. The same thing holds true on a football team. They do know that they've got a solid foundation, and from that foundation, someday, they're going to have one of the finest football teams assembled. But when these mistakes stop being made and these errors, which are things that can happen, there's nobody in the world that's infallible. That's why there's erasers on pencils, Bob. But so I can only say to you that I sincerely think that there's hope for them and that I feel that they will have a fine football team in the years to come.
As you might expect, when a team is losing, a quarterback is a target for, well, most of the people who criticize the Bears say, well, what's wrong with Avellini? He throws interceptions. He doesn't move too well. He doesn't seem to have an offensive grasp of the game. But actually, Avellini's not calling the plays, is he?
Well, Bob, he's calling some of the plays. He calls, I would imagine, from my observation, he's calling about 50% of the plays. In other words, of every four plays, he will call two. And crucial situations, from my observation, again, or from my viewpoint, I think that they're sending in a few of the plays. I feel that is up to the coaching, the system, or the coaches to make that decision. I always have felt that the quarterback must have control of the game. He should know exactly what's going on. It doesn't seem possible to me with a man who's been playing for 4 or 5 years should not be able to read a defense and know what to do. So as far as Avellini, it's a very, very unusual situation. The people are picking on him. You have to understand, and may I just regress for one moment. When I played for the Bears, and I usually don't talk too much football, every Monday, Coach Hallis and myself would have a private meeting. He would show me the films of the game. He never, ever criticized his quarterback in public or never criticized his quarterback in front of the teammates who I was playing with. But many times he would say to me when we're looking at the movies for hours and hours on end.
By yourself.
Just the two of us alone in a room. And he would sit there and I would run the machine. He'd say, run it back, run it forward, run it back. Why did you call this play? Why did you do this? Why all these things happen? I can only say to you, Bob, that you can be second-guessed so easily in this game, and I was second-guessed many, many times. And I made many mistakes, but he taught me right from wrong. And I try to learn from these experiences. If I had learned today, not to say to make the same mistake tomorrow, at least I've accomplished something on that given day. And these experiences that I'd gone through with Hallis was tremendous to me. In that, Bob, I did learn an awful lot, and it helped me. However, being second-guessed is not fair to a quarterback. People do not realize many, many times it's not the quarterback's fault. You got a 10 men. It could be an offensive lineman missing his assignment. It could be an offensive end going down and running the wrong pattern. You could call a play and their defense could maneuver into a zone or double zone or a different kind of formation. So you can't second-guess because it's so easy for a quarterback to make a mistake. But let me say this, and I mean this right from the depths of my ability and a little bit I know about football, that Avellini is doing a fine job. And Jim Finks is right, that he is doing a good job. And, of course, the Bear offense is primarily a drop-back quarterback. And, of course, as you will know, what's going to happen in modern football, because of the three-man rush and the eight-man back, and they're throwing to an eight-man zone, is difficult. You're going to have rollouts. You're going to have to try to pick apart the defenses. You're going to have to break these zones. And eventually it's going to be rolling out by the different quarterbacks. And that's why Williams and Zorn and Grogan are doing so well, and Jones, because they're that way. And Avellini has the capabilities, and the Bears will, I'm sure, someday realize that that's the direction that they're going to go. But as far as I'm concerned, the Bears have done a good job. It's just been a few bad mistakes and some crucial moments, and that's all it takes. And Lombardi always said, and Coach Hallis always said, it's usually one play that makes the difference between victory and defeat.
These interesting opinions on football you're listening to are from one of the great quarterbacks of all time and an old friend of mine, Sid Luckman. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Sid, one of the former Bear greats that you and I were very fond of, he was a dear friend of yours and a dear friend of mine, the late Joe Stidahar. Oh. He was on this program many, many a time, and he said something that's really worth considering. Now, I know that he had two great quarterbacks. He had Van Brocklin and Waterfield, and I don't think there's ever been a combo like that on any pro team. But let's take the case of Washington to show you a little difference in thinking. The former Bear coach Pardee is there. They get off in front and they win six straight games with Pardee, with Theismann playing quarterback, the former Notre Dame quarterback. They blow two games in a row. Now he's got two quarterbacks of comparable talents. So the next game, last Sunday, he started Kilmer. Kilmer threw I don't know how many touchdown passes, three touchdown passes. They won easily. It makes me feel that there's some sense to Joe Stidahar's philosophy that if a quarterback is going badly and he doesn't happen to be hot or he's cold on a certain day, why does he have to play four quarters?
Bob, that's a great, very astute observation. And Stidahar and myself, as you know, we were very, very close friends. We played together. He's one of the fellows that when I came up to the Bears and put his arms around me with love and affection, we grew together. In fact, we have a little place in the country, and I'd go out there and I'd sit with Joe because he didn't live far away. We'd come over and sit around the pool, and I can honestly tell you this, that we would just sit there for hours and talk about football and about life and in general, because to me, the name of the ball game is people and caring for people, and I cared, and Joe Stidahar cared. And this gets back to the thing that's important in your question, because I don't want to deviate. Joe Stidahar believed that you should have two quarterbacks. That's not been my observation of football. I honestly feel, and my conclusive evidence is that if you have one great quarterback, the boys will respect and admire him. However, Steidelhauer was in a unique position, Bob, in that he had the two greatest football players that ever played on one team at one time together. They both were all pro. They both could have made any team great. That was one of the unusual situations. It doesn't usually happen that way, but there are some points that you do have to consider. And let me tell you what they are. You're right. If I was playing, or Avellini is playing, whoever, if whoever was playing a game and you're going bad, the simplest thing a coach to do is sit you down for two or three series of downs and try to calm you and cool you and have you watch what's going on the defense. And by your observation and your new and your keen knowledge of the game, you can then go back into the game and have a better perspective of what to happen than what has been happening. But somehow or other, coaches sometimes do not do that. Now, I'm not second-guessing a coach. That's their viewpoint. It doesn't necessarily have to concur with my thinking. However, under the normal routine of general business or anything else, when the man isn't doing well, you give him a little rest and put another fellow in there. And whatever teams haven't done that, they do it for whatever the reason may be, and I have not been able to understand, because I do feel that when you're going real bad, sometimes you stay in that bad streak, and if they give you a chance, as I stated before, an opportunity to rest one or two series, and you know who did that the other day? The Zorn got hurt against Denver last week, and they put this other boy in who did a fine job, and then they put Zorn back in because his injury wasn't that serious. But I noticed in the next series of downs, he had a sensational march down the field and almost won the game. He threw a touchdown pass, and the fellow hit his fingertips and went off of it, and they would have won the game. So that is the truth. Steidel had his point of view, and again, this is coaching. This is the coach's decision, and they always remember they make the final decision.
Now, the Bears have two backup quarterbacks, one from the West Coast and Phipps, who had a great record with Purdue. These fellows, I know Phipps is drawing a good salary. What is the use of paying these fellows if they're not able to play or if they're not good enough to play? Why not eliminate the ones that can't play up to football standards and get a backup man who is very good that you could put in there? Why go on with this kind of a situation year after year?
That's a very good question. Let me say this. Football today is it's really a very, very tough game, and that the men are so big. They're so fast. They're so agile. They have every single bit of knowledge, and that they're better coached than the previous generations. I can say this to you, that you've got to have three quarterbacks. You must, because look what's happened this year. They knocked out six of the finest quarterbacks in football. You can name them right down the list. You can start off with Jones and Greasy, and you know the rest of them as well as I do. So you've got to have backup quarterbacks, and the best ones you can have, the better they are, the better it is for you. But for whatever the reason, but the Bears decide to go with Avellini, they feel that over the years he has performed a better job than in the other two. You must understand one thing that very few people really do understand. Bob, the coach's job depends upon victory. Therefore, he's going to always use the men that he thinks will bring him victory. Because last year in the National Football League, they replaced 10 coaches. And it's very difficult once you lose a job as a head coach to get another one. It's a difficult thing. So they want to win as much as the fans, more than the fans. Their life and their family and their whole world depends upon their victory. So therefore, they want to win. So if it's their decision to use Avellini as the best quarterback, what can we say? It's their decision.
Sid, just for a little change of pace, how about telling our audience and our listeners here the story of the 100-year-old man?
Oh, Bob, I was telling that coming over in the car, and I don't know if it's a story about life that I think is so true. I think it's a cute story, but I'll sort of expedite it so we don't go. The man was 100 years old, and the good Lord looked down upon the earth, and he saw this beautiful man who reached his 100th birthday. And he looked upon this man and tapped the fairy godmother and said, "Fairy godmother, there on that earth is the most beautiful man. He has served humanity. He's been charitable. He's been kind to everyone on this earth. He's done everything in this world to make his fellow man happy. I want you to go down on that earth and tell him he has one single wish. And whatever that wish may be, I, as the good Lord, will grant him that wish." So he went down, and the fairy godmother went down. He tapped this beautiful man on the shoulder. He said, "I'm the fairy godmother sent by the good Lord to grant you one wish." The man looked at him in astonishment, his 100-year-old man. He said, "Well," he said, "that's beautiful. I will just wish that I live another 100 years, but I do not make the same mistakes that I made my first 100. She said, "I'm sorry, I cannot grant you that wish. You can only have one wish." Well, he said, in that case, I'd like to have the opportunity of living 100 years. She went back to the good Lord, and the good Lord granted man this wish. At the end of the second 100 years, the same thing happened again. He had lived a beautiful life, and the fairy godmother went down there. She tapped him on the shoulder again. She said, you know, you've lived so beautifully. The good Lord has sent me down here again. What would you like to do, and what wish would you want? He looked at her, he pondered and thought, and finally he looked at her and thought, and he said, well, he said, I'd like to die. I want to die. She said, my goodness, that's terrible. The good Lord doesn't want you to die. He said, well, he said, I want to die. She said, why? And he turned to her and said, you know, if I did not learn in my second 100 years not to make the same mistakes that I made in my first, I don't continue to continue.
Oh, that's a mighty, mighty cute story.
And it's true to life, because all of us seem, for whatever the reason may be, we seem to make the same mistakes. And if you can learn by mistakes and not make them again, that makes you so much better in way of life and better person for going on in this earth.
They honored a mutual friend of ours the other day at Wheaton, the Great Red Grange, the Wheaton Ice Man.
Yes, they did. And as you know, Bob, I was the sort of like the chairman out there, or what you say, the gentleman that was the toastmaster. And it was wonderful to see this tremendous man, this man that was an immortal legend, the man that was in the days of Ruth Grange and, I guess Bill Tilden, you can go on and name him, but that was the Dempsey era.
Bobby Jones.
That was the golden era. But I'll tell you one thing, he was a beautiful person, a sensational guy, and he never let fame or he never let this notoriety go to his head. He always kept his feet on the ground. He knew where he was going, and it was a beautiful thing to watch, and I was so happy that I was able to be there. But you know, they did honor our coach the other day, the Easter Seal Society, and it was the most beautiful affair, and I was so happy because I knew it meant so much to him, and Coach Howells was elated at the way the thing went, because I had an occasion to call him. I had left that afternoon for New York and called him from New York, and he was ecstatically happy that this great thrill and this great honor had been bestowed upon him, and I was so happy to see it happen to him, because I think you know the respect that the city and the world and America has for George Halas.
Well, I agree with you. You know, they talk about violence in pro football today. How would you compare the violent part of the game with your great years?
Well, football is football. Football is an emotional game. They build you up, and as Coach Halas Lombardi always, it's like war. You start on a Tuesday, you get the heat up, they build you up, to such emotional heights that you go on to go out there and just almost totally obliterate and destroy your opponent. It's just a way of trying to do things. I just think sometimes the boys overdo the violence and that they try to literally destroy their opponents. I'd like to see where they could be violent, but not violent to where they that cause injury to some of the quarterbacks and some of the other players, because they're only defeating their own purpose. So I'd say the game is a violent game. It's a game you have to understand. It's a game of physical hazard. When you walk on that field, you know that the possibility is always there that your career could end, but in your own mind, you cannot afford to think about it, because then you cannot continue in the kind of game and the kind of spirit that you want to play in.
Sid Luckman, you'll see him tomorrow in the second game on television. He'd been playing as a pro for many, many years. He had an operation. He wears glasses all the time. Still, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever lived, Bob Greasy of Miami.
Bob Greasy happens to be a friend of mine. I've talked to him many times. He's astute. He's knowledgeable. He's brilliant. He knows how to attack a team. But you must remember, there's a strange thing about life. There's the Halas's era. There's Paul Brown's era. There's Vince Lombardi's era. We got a Shula era now. Who the coach of the 80s will not is as I told you before, a lot depends upon the offensive coordinators of different teams as to how good the quarterback's going to be. Then he just carries out their wishes and their demands and their desires. However, I will say this to you, that Greasy is a sensational football player, as are so many other young boys coming up. And as I stated before, Bob, they're going to get better and better and better as time goes on.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, one of the great quarterbacks of all time, Sid Luckman of the Bears. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Sid Luckman as our guest today on this Sunday. Next Sunday, one of the all-time Notre Dame greats, Ziggy Zarabsky. What a football player that guy was. Notre Dame still talks about Ziggy, and of course, Sid, he's a friend of yours and a friend of mine, and you saw him play.
Not only did I see him play, I coached at Notre Dame when he was there, and Ziggy is the kind of fellow each football team and every football team needs, and that he's an instinctively born leader. Each football team must have two or three or four men who lead their fellow men. If you don't have that kind of spirit, and there aren't people like Zarabsky and Steidahar and those kind of fellows, it's hard to to mold the team. You've got to be able to control the three or four men, and Zarabsky was one of them. He's a sensational football player and a great guy on top of it.
Well, we're looking forward to having Ziggy with us next Sunday, so don't miss it.
Oh, I won't miss it for the world. I hope to be in town to listen to it, you know. And, Bob, I just want you to know that I've followed your career, and I don't mean to flatter you, but you've done one of the finest jobs that's ever been done in the history of sports casting. And to have me on this program is indeed an honor and privilege for me, Bob, to sit here and face you and have to say these kind and these wonderful things you've said about me. That's what made me feel very, very deeply. I'm honored, but more important, I thank you for all the things you've said about me, all the many, many favors you've done for me in my past.
Well, it's all been a pleasure, and I meant every word of it.
Thank you, Bob. Bless you always.
Certainly lived up to it. We've been delighted to have as our guest today a fellow that knows football inside and out, one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever lived, Sid Luckman, who certainly has to be regarded as the greatest quarterback that the Bears have ever had. Too bad we couldn't put him in a uniform and take him out to Soldier Field today. He looks like he could still play. But anyway, it's always a pleasure to have him. Remember, we'll talk football again next Sunday with the pride of Notre Dame, Ziggy Zarabsky, and remember to be with us. Have a happy day, and now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.